WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Morley Safer, the CBS correspondent known for decades of work on the Sunday news magazine 60 Minutes, died of pneumonia yesterday at his home in New York. He was 84. Safer won a host of awards, including Emmys, Peabody's, and a George Polk Award. Terry interviewed him in 1990. Safer's reporting ranged far beyond 60 Minutes. He covered wars in the Middle East, the conflict in Northern Ireland, the Cultural Revolution in China, the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia, and most significantly, the war in Vietnam. He was known for his compelling stories from Vietnam of American troops in combat and the impact of the war on civilians. Safer's report of Marines burning Vietnamese huts while weeping villagers begged him to stop so infuriated President Johnson that he wanted Safer fired and had him investigated as a potential communist. Let's start with an excerpt of that 1965 report from Vietnam.
If there were Viet Cong in the hamlets, they were long gone, alerted by the roar of the amphibious tractors and the heavy barrage of rocket fire laid down before the troops moved in. The women and the old men who remained will never forget that August afternoon. Today's operation is the frustration of Vietnam in miniature. There is little doubt that American firepower can win a military victory here. But to a Vietnamese peasant whose home is means a lifetime of backbreaking labor, it will take more than presidential promises to convince him that we are on his side.
Can you describe what the mission was?
The mission was not an extraordinary one. I had been up in Da Nang, which was the where the headquarters of the Marines were. The Marines were responsible in Vietnam for something called I Corps. It's the military way of saying First Corps. And I had arrived back up in Da Nang. I used to go up there every couple of weeks. And went out from the press center and checked in with various battalions to find out whether they had operations going on. And this one group said they had an operation going on the next morning. Would I like to come? And I said, yes, I would. And the cameraman, Hattuk Khan, and I, and a young man named Tien, who was a sound man, arrived at, 5:30, 6 in the morning. And off we went in some amphibious tracked vehicles. And along the way, a young officer told me they were going to, in effect, burn out a group of hamlets called Cam Ne. And I said, why? And he said, because the head honcho, the head Vietnamese honcho, who was, I guess, would have been the district chief, had ordered it. And I found this hard to believe because, as brutal as search and destroy operations often were, at least in theory, they were not designed to level a place. I mean, if you received fire, if there was fighting, that might have been the inevitable result. But we moved into this village. They laid down a full array of what they call prepping it, rockets, some artillery, and very heavy small arms fire with very little return fire seemed to be coming out of the place. And then the Marines moved in and proceeded to burn the village down with everything from flamethrowers to cigarette lighters. And this wasn't an atrocity. You can't make any comparison with anything that happened in Germany or something like My Lai. This is quite a different kind of thing. But nevertheless, people were in shock to have seen on their television screens this kind of action by their boys.
After your report from Cam Ne, you laid awake all night with a gun, a loaded gun. What were you afraid of? What were you expecting?
Well, after sending that piece in, we left Da Nang, went back to Saigon. And the following day, you must remember, Terry, I was younger. The following day, I got a call from the Marines in Da Nang saying if I ever showed my face there again, they would not be responsible for what happened to me. And I said, well, you've never been responsible for what happens to me. What do you mean by that? Is this a threat? We just want to tell you, show your face around here and something's going to happen. So I went to Hatukan and I said, listen, I'm not going to tell you you got to come up back up there, but I'm going up. Do you want to come? Let's see this thing through. So Khan and I went back to...
This is your cameraman.
Yeah, back to Da Nang, and we had a little... The Marines ran something called a press center. It was like a motel there. And each of the networks and a couple of the papers had permanent rooms there. It's the only time I carried a gun. And I went into the sort of bar, dining room, and had my dinner alone with Hatukan. Nobody would join us, except for an Air Force officer who hated the Marines because he was in the Air Force. And at about 8 or 9 o'clock, I got up, and there was a lot of cracks coming from the bar and pretty rough stuff. And I pointed to my bag. I said, there's a gun in here. Anybody can comes through that door, I'm just going to blow them away. I'm not going to ask any questions. You know, tough guy. I've seen too many movies or something. And I was scared stiff. And Khan and I went back and we got into our bunks. And I locked the door and I... sat there trying to lay in bed trying to read, and I had this pistol on the night table, and I had the safety on, and then I had the safety off, and then I better leave the safety on because I'm liable to roll over in the middle of the night and shoot my foot off or something. So I put the safety on, and I lay awake all night scared as hell that somebody might actually come through the door. And I knew I wouldn't do anything. I just don't think I could fire a pistol at someone, or at something for that matter. Anyway, it was tempers cool, to put it that way. And my relationship with the Marine Corps now is very good.
Morley Safer speaking with Terry Gross in 1990. Safer died yesterday in New York. He was 84.